Hey guys, Waka Waka, it's Fozzy Bear here. I know what you're thinking. Where are my Nano Brew the podcast? Well, I want to reassure that we do have new episodes of Nano Brew coming very soon in your podcast feed. But for now, you can listen to The Funky Boss Show with the host The Funky Boss, or my show, The Dump Bucket Show. But for your wait, we have a special gift that we're going to be playing in this feed. It's an episode of The Funky Boss Show, featuring Justin Knepp of Indiana on Tap. It's a great episode, great listen, and I hope you guys enjoy.
And now, coming to you live from Indianapolis, Indiana, Studio One at Books and Brews, featuring today's funkiest, weirdest, and downright strangest business people we can find. This is the Funky Boss Show.
All right, welcome to the Funky Boss Show, everybody. I'm Jason, CEO of Books and Brews, Flat 12 Beer Works. And this is the Funky Boss Show. I'm here today with Justin from Indiana on Tap. What is up, Justin?
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, man. It's fun. It's really fun for you to be here for a couple of reasons. Number one, I love what you do, what you have done for the industry.
Thank you.
And also since just, I mean, this is what's been really fun about the show is that I've been able to dig back into my relationships like from almost day one. I mean, I want to say, I guess I can't tell you like the first time I remember you walking in the door and us chatting, but it was real early on.
It was before you opened. I remember that. I remember coming in and you weren't fully open yet and having a conversation.
So that early?
Oh, it was very early.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I didn't even know that.
I live in Fishers. I live 5 minutes from here. So I was intrigued when you were opening. I couldn't wait to get in and meet you and... Yeah, that's been, what, 5 years ago? 4 years ago?
Over 5 years
over
now.
5 years
ago. Because our fifth anniversary was March 21st. Well, that's the actual anniversary. We moved the party around a little bit. But, yeah, so over 5 years now. So it's crazy. Time flies. Where was Indiana on Tap at that point?
So it was 2014 when we launched. So is that when you guys started?
March of 2014.
It was about the same time when we had just started. Now, we didn't know exactly what we were yet, what we were going to do. I had some ideas, but that's why remembering the conversation with you is because we were in the very early phases of what we were trying to build and what we were trying to create as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. So one of the reasons why I want to do a show like this is because I love talking to small business owners, kind of like for the future small business owners in a way of origin stories, number one. Yeah. Like I love to hear how things came about. Like,
yeah.
So how did Indiana on Tap come from something you're, how did you think of it? And then how did it come from something that you thought of to taking the leap to doing it?
I loved craft beer. So I was working for a company based out of Chicago. I lived and worked in Chicago for a long time from Indiana originally, but have moved back to here. But a guy that I worked with in Chicago, well, he was actually based in Atlanta. He got me hooked on craft beer when we would get together for company visits. He's the one who hooked me up. He's the one who got me interested in it, right?
Yeah.
So then I started really getting into Indiana craft beer, and there was no resource online. I got online trying to find, like, okay, all I wanted was a directory of all of the Indiana craft breweries. I wanted to see pictures. I wanted like what are their flagship beers? What do they look like? I wanted to plan some visits, and there was nothing. So
yeah.
That's where the idea was born, of like, hey, let me create an online resource. And to start with, it really was a directory more than anything of all of the Indiana craft breweries at the time. Let's make it very visual. Let's get a lot of pictures. Let's show pictures of their flagship beers as well. And so Indiana on Tap was born simply starting as a website. Again, not really knowing what it was going to be. But as soon as we then created our social media channels to accompany the website, that's when I realized that it really was fulfilling a need in the marketplace. People were writing us saying, oh, wow, like there's nothing like this. Thank you. Like
Right. We
were just looking. Thank you for having a map of all of the breweries. Believe it or not, that did not really exist in 2014, which sounds kind of crazy. So that's where it started. And from there, it just continued to grow. And like now, like I think and I look back, I'm trying to remember, the phases you go through. But
Because all business has to evolve over time,
right?
I mean, in some regards, you have to be able to see where the market gaps are and fill them. But, I mean, overall, what I'm hearing, too, in your origin story when it first started was the basic of, here's the thing that I want, and I don't find it, so I'm going to create it.
Yeah, for sure. It really was meeting a need in that way. And then when we started getting into more editorial stuff, like talking about beer, started getting into more craft beer news, craft beer events,
right,
the website started to expand. And really at that point, the opportunities started to expand. I guess it would have been, let me think about this, 2015 maybe? So the first big event, so we were approached by the town of Whitestown, right? I'll never forget this, because that, as it relates to events, that was sort of our first big break, where they approached us saying, hey, big fan of what you guys do. We were wanting to plan a big craft beer festival. It seems like you guys clearly know Indiana craft beer. You clearly have relationships with the breweries. You know, do you guys want to help us with this? And I thought, well, why couldn't we? We've attended dozens and dozens of events at this point. We have good relationships with the breweries. And so that's when we actually, that's how we created our first event, which was the Whitestown Brew Fest, which is now this will be the fifth year, sixth year for that. So
that's awesome, man.
Yeah, and that's how it started. And again, that was sort of our jump into getting involved with events on the marketing side, on the management side. And, you know, now we're more than just an events company. Again, Indiana on Tap is a media, marketing, and events company.
Gotcha.
A lot of what we do is very much driven by events. But
and a t-shirt company.
Well, we were talking about that. We make great t-shirts.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get yours.
Visit indianatap.com/shop.
Yes.
Yeah, we do have really great t-shirts. And but no, to get back to what we were talking about. And so I'm trying to remember. It started gaining momentum. More people were getting interested. And that really created more and new opportunities to grow what became not a hobby at that point, but a real business. And it is a real business. I don't know if you want to jump into some of the other stuff that we started to do, but it evolved into a whole lot more than just that.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I'm interested in, that I really think, like, the people listening to this who are thinking about doing business or are interested in making, you know, not missing those opportunities. Here's what I love about your story is not only did it start off as looking for something you couldn't find, filling that need yourself. And then the evolution, though, was when the event opportunity approached you from a revenue standpoint, mm-hmm. you didn't meet that. Where I think a lot of people screw up in small business is that they meet that and go, that's not what we do.
Yeah.
As opposed to going like, ooh, how can we do that?
Yeah.
There's an opportunity there. And then going for it, because the events have become a real integral part of what you do, right? Like, would you, like, now, like, so tell me where's the company now then when it comes to events and social and what you do, like the stuff you offer? Like,
yeah, well, on the event side of things, you know, so we've now, specifically, we have contracts in place with cities and municipalities all over the state. You know, we found our niche. And by the way, every single city that we work with for a city-hosted event, they approached us. We never actually were out there trying to market ourselves saying, hey, this is what we can do for your city.
I love that. And I just want to jump in quick there. Yeah. What I love so much about that is that it was true awareness. Like, you're just putting awareness out about who you are and what you do.
Yeah.
And then people find themselves down like the sales funnel. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in the same way I told my staff recently, if you know the name of a lead singer of a band, it's because you looked it up.
Yeah.
But like, how many times did you have to hear that song before you cared, you know, who even sang it?
Yeah.
Let alone, you know, who the lead singer is.
Yeah.
And isn't that an amazing thing? Literally, if you know who the band is, like, that's because you did that work to find it.
Oh, for sure.
And that's exactly what I love about you guys. What a lot of people do is they skip the awareness part. Like, they skip the part of, like, just pushing out content, pushing out, you know, this is what we do, this is what we do. And then people never build the impressions to even get to the sale.
Yeah.
Or they try to go around and go, you know, I got something to sell you, I got something to sell you, I got something to sell you. Yeah. And they don't even have any context.
Yeah.
So you guys provided all the context up front, and there's so much, I think in the business world, there's so much to learn from how you guys did it right.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah. Events, I mean, to go back to your question, I mean, events have become a big part of what we do, but I also get a little bit sensitive of making sure that people understand that we are more than just an events company. You know, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about events and, you know, the event landscape as it relates to the Indiana craft beer industry has changed significantly in the last few years. You know, it's becoming harder for established and especially new events to sell tickets to events.
Totally.
Right? But at the same time, events aren't going to go away. And so from a business perspective, we saw that coming. I saw that coming a few years ago.
Right.
And so from a business perspective, I thought, well, how can we start to transition and what can we do to add value to the industry where we can add some value to every single event and not just our own events? And that's how our ticketing platform was born. And that is absolutely what I am the most excited about right now.
Yeah.
So ontaptickets.com, yeah. Indie OnTap created that. We own that. We run it.
And we've used it at least probably a half a dozen times. Well, maybe four or five. Yeah.
It's a full service ticketing platform. I hate to make the comparisons to Eventbrite, but I mean, it's Eventbrite for Indiana craft beer, wine, spirits, and food fest events. What's unique about it is, like all of the other ticketing platforms, it's free. But anyone who uses this platform is going to get free marketing across Indiana OnTap's network, which is a very, very large audience, as well as the OnTap Tickets network of previous ticket buyers. Here's the example I always use. So why would you use OnTap Tickets? Let's go back to the Eventbrite example. I once purchased a ticket on Eventbrite, right, years ago. So I get an email from them once every couple of weeks saying, hey, check out these events coming near you.
Yeah, suggested events.
It's all types of events. I got an email a few weeks ago, and it was a circus coming to town.
Right.
So imagine, though, because OnTap Tickets is designed exclusively for Indiana craft beer, wine, spirits, and food fest events, all of the ticket buyer data that we collect from that information, those are all people who've just attended those events. So anyone who uses our platform, your event is cross-marketed in a very smart way to those people. And it's helping to sell more tickets to more events. We're creating this network of people who are clearly interested in Indiana craft beer, wine, and spirits and food fest events. And so we used to say, you know, we're going to help you sell more tickets at no extra cost. Really what the promise is we're going to put your event in front of the largest, most targeted, most ideal audience. And if it's a good event, it's going to sell more tickets. So we're very excited about that. The other thing that we launched with that I'm very, very excited about as well is we created this new report called the Marketing Intelligence Report. And I won't spend too much time on this.
No, it's great. This is amazing stuff.
Well, it's exciting, and I geek out on it because it's data. So again, it's all about what can we do to continue to add value to the industry. If we're going to get involved with every event, yes, we want to help them sell more tickets. But what can we do to make them smarter about who's buying these tickets? Where are they buying tickets? Why are they buying tickets? So we created this report that is truly, truly one of a kind. I mean, none of the major global platforms out there offer anything like this. So it's called the Marketing Intelligence Report. It breaks down all of the information. Any smart marketer would be able to look at this and be like, wow, like these are the undersold markets. This is where I'm surprised that we didn't sell more tickets in this market. And it tells you exactly who these ticket buyers are too. And so again, as a business, it's just continuing to find ways to build upon what we're doing now. And I know I keep saying it, but continuing to add value to the event organizers and the people who are trusting us, you know?
Yeah. What I was trying to look up the book really quick. There's a short book that talks about this type of concept of customer centricity. It's by Pete Fader. I just looked it up. Peter Fader. If you look up customer centricity, focus on the right customers for strategic advantage. It's good. And one of the examples, I mean, like most books that I read, like there's take and leave. You know what I mean? But what I loved about this, and it made me watch about people, businesses that are either just product centric or actually customer centric. And the easiest example that I could ever give in the grocery world, because everyone buys groceries, is that Kroger is fundamentally customer centric because it you put your number in and it tracks what you buy and then it sends you coupons for exactly the shit that you buy.
Yeah.
Whereas the Walmarts of the world are product centric. It's just about the cheapest product and then you just roll through the turnstile and they don't track you.
Yeah.
So, you know, and so I love the idea of customer centricity, especially in an evolving world where people are going so deep into niches, because now you can find anything you're looking for anytime you want it with the internet.
Yeah.
And that's why, and we started to talk about this before, and that's why I want to get into it and give the context so we can get back to the conversation of where events are going, because I think it's a microcosm of the fact that you can find exactly what you find when you want to find it.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to find a beer fest anymore. I can find a Harry Potter beer fest.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like I don't need to find, you know, I can find one on bicycles or one at the zoo or one at, you know, like I can get the craft beer that I want into my nerd realm as well.
Yeah.
And so being able to make sure as you do that, being able to track those customers and know exactly what they want. And from like a restaurant standpoint, being able to know, like, hey, we have a stout release coming up. I'm gonna send an email just to the people who buy the stouts.
Yeah.
You know, being able to have that type of trackability, because that's also value adding for the customer too. Because that way they know they're not gonna miss that big release. They're not gonna miss that cool Harry Potter event that they want to go to. So I'll stop my pontificating there, but like, where do you see events going in the next, like, because you're super pumped about the here's my overall question, because the event platform is awesome, especially for that, the customer centric nature of diving in and finding out exactly who's buying these tickets to what events. It's also awesome because you started as the media company, and then you've done what we're trying to do backwards, which, if you started as a media company, you've gone down and found we can actually touch the sale. The newspaper can't sell the tickets for you.
Right.
They can only advertise it. You can do both. You can advertise it and sell the ticket. We're trying to go the other way. We're trying to sell, you know, sell in the restaurant, and then we're developing the media company for books and beer and board games and stuff the opposite way. But your way's a little easier to do. But with that being said, what I would see as a businessman, like, the big gains for you, the big wins would probably be huge events.
Yeah.
But that's not where the market's going. Well, so give me your hot, spicy take or just how you feel about how events are heading in the next.
We were talking a little bit about this, I think, before we started recording as well. But events aren't going to go away. Ticket events aren't going to go away. I think it's still going to be important for breweries, for companies to have these events to create experiences. I mean, that's what an event is. It's an experience. That's not going to go away. But you are seeing what I would say is a market correction with Indiana craft beer events specifically.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. 4 or 5 years ago, I think people would want to buy tickets and go to 4 or 5 events a year. Now they're probably only going to go to 1 or 2, maybe 3.
Right.
It's harder to sell tickets. So I think you're going to see a correction and some of these events going out of business, some of these events getting absorbed by other events. I think events are going to answer your question, events are going to become smaller and more specialized, but they're not going to go away.
Yeah.
I think that's happening. We're already absolutely seeing that happen. But there's still those 25 to 30 to 35 large events that are never going to go away. Events that are always going to have 2,500 or more people, those are going to stay. But, man, trying to sell tickets to a new craft beer event that is just a generic craft beer event, good luck. That's tough, you know?
And now what you guys have is, not only do you have the experience and the expertise, the consulting knowledge to help out any new event, but or any old event coming in, now you have data.
I want to get into the
customer,
data.
On the customer level. Yeah, talk to me about what you guys are, like, what are you collecting and how are you targeting?
Well, we're a very data-driven company in everything that we do. I look at some of these other businesses who, I mean, even, honestly, even other breweries who don't even make an effort to collect email address data from their customer. I mean, it kind of blows my mind. So we collect all of the same data that you would collect, you know, with any regular event platform. That's the data that we're collecting. And we're collecting a little bit of additional data, and we're doing it through the checkout process of what we're asking these people. Simple things, but impactful of it. You know, during the checkout of our events, of how did you hear about this event, and having 8 drop-down options that are about the most broad options, but very helpful that our event organizers can customize. But also, you know, asking them when their birthday is, and this information is all voluntary, by the way. But getting that information, being able to make sense of it, that and all the other aspects of what we do, we put a lot of emphasis on data just to make ourselves smarter, to be more focused on the customers. If I got a little bit off
yeah,
topic
no.
There.
So here's what I'm thinking. Like, if I'm the town of Made Upsville, Indiana, and I'm coming in, or maybe I've had a craft beer event for the last couple of years and it's doing okay.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, Indiana Tap tickets.
Yeah.
I'm like, what exactly are you selling me on here, customer wise? Like, what can you do for us? Obviously, consulting wise, you guys have experience.
Sure,
I'm sure there's tips of the trade that you can give us consulting wise, but what actually is the software doing for us?
Well, again, and some of the software, specifically the data per event, is going to be provided to the event organizer after the event. Literally summing up everything, all of their information from their attendees. What are the age demographics? What's the gender demographics? When did they buy tickets? You know, how, what percentage of tickets were sold? 60 days, 45 days, 30 days.
I think that's really, I think that's really important.
Well, we're trying to get,
don't you?
It is, but we're trying to get, we're trying to create benchmarks. There's no,
yeah.
When it comes to events, we learned there's like no benchmark data. And, we would start to meet with event organizers and say, hey, congrats on your recent event that, you know, you just completed. Are you bringing it back next year? Yes, you are. Great. Who bought tickets to this event? Like, who was your audience? Where'd they come from? Everyone always, they just look at you and like, I don't
know. No idea, right?
I don't know.
Yeah.
When did you buy, when did you sell the majority of your tickets? I don't know. In the final week, I guess. So we're trying to just make sense of all of that because, again, we genuinely believe Indiana craft beer, wine, and spirits events, they're not going to go away. So let's get smarter about it. If it's going to be harder to sell tickets, we want to be able to have data to provide our customers to say, if you want to set yourself up to be successful, sell more tickets, this is where and how you can do that.
I'm super fired up because here's why I love this so much, everything that you just said. And I'm going to say this so we can cut this clip, if we can give it to all franchisees or even all of our staff. I had this conversation again yesterday, and I'm so tired of having it. Uh-huh. Whether you're a brewery or you're a restaurant, or I don't care what you do for a living, if you sell, you know, I don't know, hot dogs, you have a food truck. Data is where decisions are made.
Oh, absolutely.
They have to, this is the conversation you should never, ever have. You need to listen to the words that come out of your mouth, and if they're ever, everyone's asking for it,
yeah,
or nobody's eating that, or, you know, those are anecdotal based on either one of your friends complained or one of your friends. I had this conversation yesterday. Well, someone, he said that he's had people telling him that they liked it better that way. I'm like, that's not a number.
Yeah.
I want you to tell him, go back and say, start writing down how many people actually ask for it that way.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day and at the end of a month, when you get to four,
yeah,
I'm going to
yeah.
say no.
Yeah.
If at the end of the month you get to 45, I'm going to say, okay, we have a reason to maybe do something differently.
Yeah.
But people too often make decisions on how they run business based on one person, just because it's a loud, noisy person, and they extrapolate that to 30, 40, 50, 100 people, when really you have hundreds of happy people coming through the turnstile that decision can negatively impact just because one noisy person made a difference. And that noisy person can come from within the company as well.
It usually does, yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, we should do it that way because everyone's been telling me that we've been doing that wrong. Like, okay, go back and count them.
Yeah.
And then if the conversation happens like, look, we've been doing polling data and the people that live within this, radius say that it's not accessible and we have to, add this to our menu, because 37 people, but to be able to try to make decisions without that data in today's day and age of niche-based driven marketing is absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah, prove it. Cut out the noise. I couldn't agree more. And, there's really no excuse with all of the technology resources available to us today to be able to track stuff. I'm trying to think of a generic example. Let's just say email marketing. I mean, it's so easy to track for us. Like, what emails are working, right? Work with the right email marketing tools to be able to see that. And again, that's a very generic example. But instead of saying, hey, people are wanting to consume this type of content or that type of email content, no, like let's actually prove that. Let's set up some tests and let's see. Data. I mean, it's huge with what we do. And like, we've really scratched the surface too. I mean, there's a lot that we can do to improve and we will do to improve. But it's all going to be based on data. I mean, it has been for a while for us.
Yeah, we could. I like having you on the show too, because since we're old chums, we could talk forever about business stuff too.
Yeah,
I do want to talk about. You guys do a lot of stuff, so I want to touch on a couple of the other things that you do. But I am also interested in this thing that you've built, because you've done a really good job meeting the needs of the market as the business has evolved. So I'm curious where it's going. Like, where's this ultimately leading to you? Like, what is the perfect end game scenario?
Franchises. I mean, to get to the point of, so how do you grow? And there's still a lot of growth for us in Indiana. There is. We are the most sort of humble, self-aware small business out there. We know who we are. We know what we do well. We know what we don't do well. I'll leave it at that. But no, to answer your question, it's to start to grow outside of Indiana. We've already done that. I use the word
I thought you had a, couple.
I use the word franchise because people understand the concept of franchises. For us, it's not technically a franchise. It's a brand licensing agreement. We launched our first one in Florida at the very end of last year.
That's what it was, Florida.
Yeah, and so there's other markets. We're in negotiations with other states right now. And so it's taking the Indiana on tap model of covering craft beer in these statewide markets or local markets in a very specific way. And replicating that from our membership model, which we can talk about as well, the ticketing side of things. But it's a very structured brand licensing agreement that is incredibly similar to a franchise model. And you would know more about franchises than anything.
It's just way less restrictive.
Our attorneys were like, well, you don't want to get into the you don't want to get into the franchise things because it's so state by state.
Franchising is extremely expensive.
Yeah,
and. I mean, in licensing isn't easy either. You know what I mean?
But it's maybe a little bit more, what would be the word, easy to scale versus franchising.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Well, and also financially.
Sure.
You know, easily to scale. You know, I'll tell everyone, if you're interested in franchising, they give you like a pass on year one. Year two is pretty easy. When you get to year three, it's a full-blown audit.
Yep.
So every year from then on, you have to get audited by independent, you know, CPA firms got to come in.
Yeah.
And they have to tear through the books, and you have to answer to every invoice.
Yeah.
And then they have to do a report that says, this year, so I have two companies, for example. Let's give you an example of like the nitpick. It's an audit, right? For me, it's nitpicky, but they're, you know. And two companies, one owns the stores, one owns the franchising. And I paid some of my attorney bills through the what they would consider the wrong side. Mm-hmm. You know, like one company owns the trademark, but I paid the bill at the other company. So like, oh, we have to disclose that you paid, you know, this $5,000. I was like, well, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, whatever. But that's how intensive it is. And it's extraordinarily expensive.
Oh,
and that's not
is.
That's not including the legal fees.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine. And all that was one of the reasons why our attorneys are like, no, let's set this up as a brand licensing agreement. But we've done it. We have everything in place, so we're ready to start to grow that into other markets. And again, it's not like our model is revolutionary. Like, what we do is not novel necessarily, but it's not really happening in any other states, and we do it very well. I think we do. And so it's for us, the long-term picture is to start to scale, to launch membership programs in other markets. To launch
talk about the membership program really quick because we haven't touched on that.
So the Indiana Tap Tasting Society Marketplace, Books and Brew is one of the first partners to sign up
for
that
years ago.
This has been around now for a little over 3 years. It's a craft beer membership and rewards program for the state of Indiana. So I'm incredibly proud about it because truly this particular model doesn't exist in any other state. We know that for sure. So it's very unique. The idea of it isn't unique, but the actual program itself is pretty unique. So there's currently a little over, let me always get to think of these numbers because they're always changing every week, 150 breweries and partners who currently participate.
Awesome. That's got to be
250 plus offers. So it's about $1,400 worth of free craft beer, wine, spirits,
that's
and food.
It's got to be a pretty heavy percentage of the, how many breweries are there now? When I opened, we were still, like, the year I opened, we broke 100.
I think we're like, I should know this number. So
it might have, maybe it's well over 200 now. I can't remember. Yeah, it's grown really fast.
Yeah, I was going to say between like 180 and 190. I wish we had, shout out to Mark Lasberry.
Shout out Mark.
Our managing editor, because he is the expert in the state with all this. He would know the exact number. I mean, the exact number.
That's a good businessman. If you really know your,
oh my gosh.
You know, if you go into a restaurant and go, how much you pay for sauce? And they go, 8 cents a serving.
Yeah.
Like, then you know that's a good business person.
We know all of this information. It's just I personally don't know all this information, but I have someone who does on our team. And that's Mark.
Mark's amazing.
Oh, he's great.
He also wrote a book on the physics of
Star Trek technologies.
Star Trek technology, right?
And how we're closer
engineering
to that reality of that technology than we think.
It's amazing. I could nerd out on that, too. I won't stop you there. Yeah, we're on the marketplace.
You need to get him on this podcast
at some point. I do. We need to get him on the dump buckets.
Yeah.
Justin, Justin's doing a dump buckets podcast. That was his former self before we took him, and then he stopped doing as much. But
I was a huge fan of the original dump buckets videos.
Yeah,
he would go to all of these events, and he was doing
little
video recaps of events, I think, before anyone
before
else was
anyone.
Doing
them. The only. And so we're helping him relaunch his brand.
Good.
And it's going to be the Nerd Out Show. So getting people on there who might do one thing but nerd out on something that's you never cool. get. Yeah, so it's a nerd out show.
Bring it
I
back,
can't wait.
Justin. Bring it back.
Is. I'm pushing, man. I'm pushing hard.
So to wrap up the Tasting Society Marketplace, so 150 breweries and craft beer bars and craft beer-centric businesses participate.
Okay, so it includes places that are not necessarily a brewery, but like a craft beer.
Like the Pint Room in Carmel,
yeah,
right?
Which is a great, bar. Which has like 100 and some taps.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, it's all integrated with our mobile app. 250-plus offers. You go in, if you're a member, and you can show the offer. Each brewery who participates, they choose what their offer is. It's free for breweries to participate, by the way. There's no charge at all.
Yeah.
Interesting thing about Indiana Tap, as a side note, we don't monetize or even attempt to monetize on the breweries at all. Like, at all. We have breweries who approach us wanting to do advertising and so forth, and we turn them down. And be like, no, we're not going to take your money. We don't do that.
Not even on your – do you do advertising on your website, though?
We've gone away from that.
Really?
It's very reactive.
I was going to say you did that for a minute maybe.
And it was very even reactive at that point, but that's never what we wanted. Look, the reality of it is, I think, is you have to have a substantial amount of traffic. I mean, we have good traffic, but if you really want to show
it's niche
a return
driven. Yeah.
But no, we do. We offer it, and we're a little bit reactive with it, but we're not focused on advertising revenues at all. Where were we? So the Tasting Society Marketplace. Imagine you're a member.
The app too, yeah.
You walk into any of these 150 plus locations, you show them the offer on the mobile app, the server will redeem it, and the majority of the offers are the equivalent of a free flight, free pint, free growler fill. And I say the equivalent because essentially what these are is electronic gift certificates. You know, we worked very closely with the Indiana ATC to structure this program. A lot of people, when we were starting, it's like, you can't do that. That's not legal. Now, we sat down with the ATC and figured out exactly what we needed to do to make this program compliant, and it's always been 100% compliant. We're in touch with them regularly. Any little change we want to make to it, we run it by them, and so they've been great partners to us. The idea of the marketplace, that's not novel. It drives me nuts when people say, well, it's the Groupon for Indian craft beer. Well, I can see why you think that, but it's definitely not. It's the incentive for that craft beer fan to want to go visit that new brewery across town, across the county, or across the state for the first time. It's the incentive. But again, it goes back to, so what's in it for the breweries? Well, we collect all of this data in the mobile app, everything. We know how many redemptions. We know what they did when they were there. It's great. So if you're a brewery, what's in it for them? Well, obviously, what's in it for the member is the incentive and the money that you save. But here's what's exciting for me with the data that we collect. Let me make sure I think about this so I get these stats right, because we re-examine this information about every 6 months. On average, 42% of members who are visiting a location, they're visiting that location for the first time.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So the goal, you know, we want to introduce these people to new breweries, new beer. It's so, doing that about half the time.
Yeah, so 42%, I mean, and you know, so you're talking about a lot of people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and this is where I think some people miss the boat on programs like this. Like, if they push back, like, well, to get a new customer in the door, like, what's your cost?
I know.
And if you can get new customers in the door for free, like, what would you pay? You know, what would you pay for that? And then to get it for free, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, but I mean, people need to think about that more when they're turning down these types of things. Like, it's silly.
And we do. Some will turn it down and they'll say, why would I ever want to give my beer away for free? And you have to try to convince them. That's not what you're doing. You're not giving anything away for free. And by the way, what other marketing platform out there are you only spending that money when the person actually walks in and sits down in your seat? And by the way, okay, so let's be hypothetical. So let's say the offer is the equivalent of like $7 towards the purchase of a flight,
right?
Which would be maybe the equivalent of a free flight. What's really our understanding, and tell me if I'm way off, is the total cost of goods and services for that $7 flight is maybe, what, $1.50?
Yeah, I mean, depending on
a little bit different.
Yeah,
I know.
On the retail level, you're probably talking about a 25% cost. So, you know, if depending on what, I mean, we charge a little extra for the flights only because it slows service down on like real busy nights. So if you're gonna, if we're gonna take a little, it takes a little extra handling. So we keep bumping it up a little bit just because we don't want 37 flights out on Friday at 7.
Yeah,
you know, but. In general, beer and if you're a brew pub, if you're selling on site, it could get down into like 8%.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a retail, like a pint room, you know, you'd love to be at 20 probably, but 25%. So yeah, you're talking about $1.50.
Let's say, okay. So
that's a short version.
$1.50, $2.
Yeah.
you as a brewery, in that case, as a marketplace partner, you're only spending that when the person comes in and sits down. But here's right. what's exciting for us with the data that we collect is we know that on average, and again, we average this out, on average, each member is bringing 1.9 people with them to visit. So again, that's on average about 3 people per. And so on average, that group on each marketplace visit is spending $38 as a group per visit. On the beer, on the food. The point I'm trying to get to is, one, the members love it. They're saving some money. It's incentivizing them to go visit these other locations. But on the brewery, the partner side, that $2 that you just spent for that offer is resulting in $38. And what is that? Someone was told me, is that maybe like a 5,000% return?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more than that.
And here's one of it. Like, I think this way, like take Uber Eats, for example. Uber yeah. Eats is relatively new, and we're on it. Nobody orders from us because we're just, you know, we do, you right? We do, you know, we do grilled cheese, which doesn't really, like, travel well.
Yeah.
But here's part of it. Here's one of the reasons I joined it is because impressions are worth money as well.
Yeah, no doubt.
So when you load up your app, every time you see someone's name.
Yeah.
You know, you would have to pay for that on Facebook nowadays.
Sure.
On Instagram, on Twitter, because you're hidden behind the algorithm, basically, unless you do.
Yeah.
So every time they're scrolling through, every time they see your name, it's an impression.
Yeah.
It's just like that song playing on the radio one more time. Eventually, it leads you down to Whitestown asking you to do an event. Like, you never know where that's going to lead. So there's value to that. How many times do they open the app and see your name even after they've come or even before they've come?
Well, that's the thing. And that's the thing that we could never actually track. So let's say because of the tasting site and marketplace, someone who lives in Carmel wants to come and visit Books and Brews Mothership for the first time.
Yep.
They come in here. Great. It got them in there. Your staff shows them a great experience, right? What we can't track is, wow, like, how many times are they coming back? You know what I mean? They can only use this offer once, right? Once per year. And so that's the thing you can't track is they've now come in. If the staff shows them a good time, if they have a good experience, they're going to come back. And again, like I said, we don't track that at all. But it's exciting. I mean, we're really proud of that program. It's good for the breweries. It's good for the partners. It's good for the members. We're realistic. Like, is this, if you're a marketplace partner, is this going to change your business? No, it's not going to make or break your business. But I'd argue that it's the highest marketing return of any platform that you're going to use.
It's such a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
But we love it. We're proud of it. Again, it's unique. And again, truly, truly, truly what we're the most proud of is it is introducing more people to more breweries. And it's like, it's directly, people always say, well, you know, how are you guys supporting Indiana brewers? How are you supporting these brewers? In my opinion, there's no better way that we could support a brewery than to help create a new customer for them. At the end of the day, right? I mean, and so that's what that whole program is designed to do. And so far, it's been a real win-win, and we've seen incredible growth. I mean, we've literally in the last year really turned a corner with it. We've had over 100% growth in the membership just in the last year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and so it's
and the events feed into that, I'm sure.
The events. I think we've become very good at cross-marketing the different things that we offer.
Absolutely.
If someone's attending one of our events, we're giving them a great first-year offer on a new membership. If someone is a member, they're getting huge discounts on all of our events.
Right.
And so we finally got very smart, and we do that, and that's been pretty successful for us.
It's a great you've done it such a great way, from the awareness to the events to the event tickets to the membership program. It's such a clean, straight line of customer acquisition.
Well, let's talk about this for a minute. This is what drove me very nuts early on, is you'd get the noise out there of people. So, you know, for the first couple of years, Indiana Tap, it was really just all about the content and just, you know, trying to establish some kind of a brand. And then when we started trying to find smart ways that added value to monetize on this, you had some noise of people, oh, you guys are now trying to make money off the breweries, you guys are trying to make money off the industry. And I was very unabashed in saying, we're trying to find products and solutions in this industry that we love that are going to add value. And as long as it's adding value, you shouldn't be ashamed for that.
It's like any other product. I mean, they don't bitch about like some new pump for the brew house or someone invents some new gadget that helps them. Of course, I mean, that's what businesses do.
Yeah.
Is they find somewhere where it's not being served and they serve it.
Yeah.
And there's no program that, you know, is driving in customers for free that already has. And part of it too is the fact that you've already established yourself. I mean, that's the big thing when people, I think, look at this story, is that you took 2 years to establish yourself as an expert in your field, and you pumped content, and you carried press releases, and
we want to be a thought leader too. And I think we've 100% done that to a small capacity. And then once you do that, then like the evolution of a lot of businesses. Well, I keep using the word value, but once you've done that, how can we now add additional value, and how can we monetize in a fair and smart way to be able to sustain ourselves to keep doing that? And that's what I think that we've done.
So when you license, and this is the last question, and I'll let you go. Really appreciate it, man. It's so fun. We align so perfectly in business, so it's really fun to talk to you, and just that we've known each other for a long time. Yeah. So if I'm in Michigan and I want a license, do I get the support and the gamut of that? Does it go from kind of like the social media or the social support media company wise? Tickets,
all of the technology. So if someone wanted to partner with us and they wanted to do a membership program, they wanted to launch their own version of a localized ticketing platform, we would be able to launch the tech versions of all of that. So literally the mobile app is designed.
And a mobile app too.
And the ticketing site is ready as well.
Gotcha.
And then a lot of, I know it sounds silly when you say it, but a lot of our intellectual property, our processes on how to manage all of that, and if they're wanting to get into events, it's a very thorough package.
Yeah.
And so again, licensing the brand, the OnTap Tickets brand, we set them up with everything. It's a great deal. I mean, and so again, we will start to be very proactive. So we're in negotiations with three other cities right now, who approached us. But what we're going to start to do is to be proactive and, hey, let's find these similar craft beer media groups who already have an established following in these major markets. And we're going to start to approach them and be like, hey, this is something that we think would make a lot of sense for you. And I think that's our big focus going into the end of the year, is to start to approach these other industry leaders in their respective markets. We have everything that they would need to get up and running with these solutions. And we've got the data, and we've got the technology and the processes. And if anyone's watching this and you're interested, reach out to info@indianontap.com. We'd love to talk to you.
Right on. And that's the last thing is go ahead and pub your where people can find you, whether you're interested in the marketplace or tickets or running events or just craft beer news reviews, that kind of stuff.
Indianontap.com. Everything we do is listed on there.
Flows through there.
It is. Yeah. Everything flows through there. And so we appreciate the support from you guys. We appreciate the support from everyone who's got us to this point. Look, we realize we're still a pretty small, we're a very small business, but we're a small business doing big things, and we're proud of what we're doing.
Absolutely.
And we're continuing to grow and get better every day, and that's all you can do.
And important stuff. And if I could say anything on top of that, because it frustrates me sometimes when people, you know, just miss opportunities, you know? And so if you're out there and you're listening to this, whether it's, I don't care if I'm expanding this bigger than just, you know, Jason and Justin, just Books and Brews and Indiana on Tap. If there's people out there that want to help you and they have an audience too, you are dumb to not do some sort of cross promotional venture somehow.
Yeah.
Because the attention arbitrage of basically taking your crowd and giving that as value to that person, the other person bringing their crowd, that is a win for everyone. Like, nobody loses in that scenario ever.
Sounds like you're trying to day trade in attention.
Exactly. Yeah, you got me there, right? Yeah.
A little Gary Vee reference.
Yeah, it is. I know. Everyone knows I love my Gary Vee. Yeah.
And maybe I didn't make the right correlation there. Yeah. When you said the word attention, I immediately thought about it. He always talks about that.
Exactly.
He's done a very good job of
attention arbitrage.
Of predicting where the attention is going to go. And boy, business, you have to do that. You got to be looking.
And be out ahead of things, too.
Months and years ahead, and not just weeks ahead of where things are trending. So
100%.
You guys have done that. Books and Brews has done that better than anyone.
Well, thanks, man. Space. I appreciate that. I try. Yeah. I mean, that's at the very least, those are the types of things I like to hang our hat on, is that we try to, just like you guys, evolve.
Yeah.
See where people's needs change.
Yeah.
You know, like when we opened 5 years ago, like, people are different now. Mm-hmm. You know, the market is different now. Every market that we're in franchise wise is different. Same thing for Indiana Tech. Like, you have to be able to look and go, okay, now what?
Yeah.
Now where do we go? How do we better serve the people that are around us? And getting out ahead of that, instead of going, oh shoot, eight other places are doing it better than me, I guess I better figure that out and you know, follow behind.
And then also just actually doing it. I mean, early on I would get so hung up on trying to have everything perfect before you would launch something new.
Oh yeah, preach.
Well, you just got to put the pen to paper. Dude, sometimes
preach.
And, when you see that, when you have the idea, just getting started on it.
Exactly.
Anyways,
just like, you know, like this, and this is another Gary Vee-ism too that I've really pushed. It's like, if you post 4 times a day, figure out how to do 10. If you do 10, figure out how to do 100. If you do 100, figure out how to do 500. And when you're thinking at scale and volume, it you don't get slowed down as much by like, oh, is the lighting right? You know, is the copy perfect?
I'd love to be invited back to the podcast sometime and to talk a little less about the business, but more just the early. I would bet we would have so many parallels, even though we're a lot smaller than what you guys do. But early on, of just the first year, I would love to talk.
Let's
about
do it,
that.
Man.
We should. That would be fun.
Absolutely.
Just the struggles, the headaches of starting your own business from scratch.
That would be probably good for a lot of people to listen to. Just from like a commiserating standpoint.
I love
probably
listening to that stuff, and I can totally. I love reading about people who start the businesses and the sacrifices they made.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
People crying themselves to sleep at night.
Totally.
All that.
Right.
It's fascinating to me.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on, Justin.
Thanks. I
really
appreciate it. Yeah.
Everyone out there listening, make sure you check out Indiana on Tap through IndianaOnTap.com, all the portals through there. Follow all their socials, get all the news reviews, buy their tickets, go to their events, get in the membership program, and buy their t-shirts.
Yeah.
Because they're also a merchandise company.
Yeah. Well, that's phase four.
Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah, it's coming.
I'll help.
Yeah.
Right on. Thanks for listening to Funky Boss Show, everybody. If you could leave me a comment, a like, subscribe, whatever you do, wherever you are, and a review. If you could do that, it would be the absolute number one best thing in the world. I will have Justin come to your house and make you a nice chicken dinner. Shout out Fozzie. Mm. Yeah. And see you next time.
Yeah, I was like, which Justin?
Yeah. Fozzie. Justin. Not Justin. He's not going to do it.